Blog Talk Radio.
Genocide. This is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? And tonight is Tuesday, September 27th, 2022. And they're trying to push us all the way back to 1622. We still charge genocide. We have a special guest whom we hope will be able to connect with us tonight. And we are indebted to the Spirit of Mandela Initiative and the political prisoners advocates known as Jericho that partnered with liberationists, I will call them, and revolutionists from all over the world to bring the message of the reality of what it means to live in the United States and what it means to live on a planet that the evil empire of the United States controls. And so tonight, once again, we still charge genocide. Brother Ralph, what's happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. And we are together one more time to try to solve our problem, that is oppressed people's problem and the problems of the world. Now, our main theme would seem to be we charge genocide continually. But that's not our main theme, but we will get back to our main theme. And the situation we're looking at today is that people of color are going backward or being stressed further in terms of housing, lack of employment, lack of education, too much incarceration, economic standards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the sad part of this is the opportunity to make inroads on this situation is quickly passing us by unnoticed. I'm talking about the wars at home and abroad and our attitudes about them or our lack of awareness of the implications of these facts. Now, I've outlined the wars at home and what they mean. And just the other day, I was told that we're going to have to broaden the program because so many of those who participated in Black Lives Matter movement have been incarcerated and are facing much time in the death camps of America. You know, when George Floyd was killed, many people went to the streets. And those people who went to the streets, many have been arrested. And as Arundhati Roy tells us, that when we have these inconsequential or non-threatening or demonstrations that do not bring consequences to the demonstrators, they are inconsequential. And she says it better than I do, but that is the reality. Now those folks who have made a dent in this society, who have made the society move or to think, are now incarcerated. And so I got a call and said, Ralph, you have, you know, the names that you're listing, very important. Those names of the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, very important that we stand up for them. But it is also important that we make those people, our people, the community, aware of what's happening and what are the implications of these arrests and how we are passing up the opportunity to make any change. And what am I talking about, opportunity? We see the society that exists is afraid of Donald Trump. Everything is stop Trump, because Trump is something to be afraid of. That is the people who are running this show now. That is the liberals. That is the Democrats. And I say to you, my brothers and sisters, we have been suffering Trumpism since 1619 or before. We have been through Trumpism. He is just the latest embodiment of anti-African sentiment, pro-imperialist sentiment, pro-colonialist sentiment, make America great again. Well, we've been hearing that. Ronald Reagan said it very clearly. Listen, we'll solve the problem with black unemployment. We'll just pay them less. Well, I have news for you, Mr. Reagan, if you were around, that has been the program of black America ever since I can remember, and I'm 88. You could get a job in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, and 60s at two-thirds of what someone white paid made. When you went to the bank, they would tear up your application before you walked out of the bank. And there's so much more. Now I'm saying, what is the answer? We must make demands on the Democratic Party to come through with their promises. The right to vote. We fought for the right to vote. died for the right to vote, Fannie Lou Hamer for the right to vote, and now they are taking it away. And we watch quietly, just like it's not happening. We have to say, I'm not afraid of Mr. Trump. We will not support the Democratic Party unless they make amends, and it let us begin with fighting for voter rights, going back to where we were 60 years ago. And so, my brother, and as I said, this is not the main focus of our program. The main focus of our program is political prisoners, those who understood and did something about it, who are suffering in the death camps. If we don't take care of them, we're certainly not going to take care of those who are presently the new political prisoners. And with that said, I've taken up too much time. And my brothers and sisters, please hang with us because we have others who will give you their take on these problems. Sister Betty.
Okay, tonight we have a very special guest. But before we introduce this international tribunal judge, I would like to discuss one of the egregious issues that our comrade from the African People's Socialist Party, Dennis Knowles, made what's happening aware of. And that's what we're about. We're about what's happening. And it is our job to investigate when we hear a news program or a news story. It is our obligation to help our people interpret, as Paulo Freire said, we have got to learn how to read our world. So, Brother Dennis, do you want to discuss the article that you shared with What's Happening that made us feel we had to contact the Spirit of Mandela Initiative warriors who have been on the front lines of fighting against this type of oppression? And the other reason that it should be on our program is this heinous act that apparently has been going on, the perpetrator is out on bail. And we have political prisoners who only stood up for freedom, who made history because they're half a century still incarcerated. So, Brother Dennis, before we go to our esteemed guest this evening, would you please just give us a brief background of the case that we're discussing?
Yes. This is about a detective who had been on a Kansas City police force for decades. And the caption is, claims a Kansas City cop was raping women, swirled for decades. His arrest brought little relief to the victims. For two decades at the Kansas City, Kansas Police Department, Detective Roger Golubski, that's G-O-L-U-B-S-K-I, was always on the lookout for his next victim, someone pretty, poor, and black, someone no one would believe over the word of a white man with a badge, prosecutors said. Golubski found one of them as she was walking home from the grocery store, another one while sifting through booking photos. This is someone that was in the police department sifting through booking photos. So he's targeting these sisters. Others he came across while serving search warrants or arresting their husbands or sons, according to detailed accounts in court records. Then Golubski would isolate them and rape them, sometimes at gunpoint, sometimes after punching or choking them, always leaving them with the warning, keep your mouth shut, or else, the women said. Now, for the first time, almost 40 years after prosecutors say his reign of terror began, Golubski faces a criminal trial and life behind bars. His arrest last week, now mind you, this was last Friday, brought some relief to the women he accused of terrorizing, but also served as a reminder of just how long it took for anyone to believe their story. I was glad but wasn't that happy, said Ophelia Williams, 60, whom Golubsky is accused of raping several times between 1999 and 2002. My gut tells it all, said Williams, who was 37 when the assault began. I can't even eat. I can't sleep. He messed me up all inside. Every time I see a cop, I get scared. Golubsky's attorney, Tom Lemon, did not return repeated requests for comment. Golubsky, who is now 69, has pleaded not guilty to 6 federal civil rights charges for sexually assaulting 2 victims while acting under the color of law. A life or death situation. The youngest of Golubsky's accusers was just 13 years old when she said the detective pulled up to her, flashed his badge, and told her to get into the car. She recounted to prosecutors before describing a horrific and violent sexual assault. Despite her cries and insistence, that she was a virgin, Golubsky told her, stop being a crybaby, and she was too old enough to make decisions, prosecutors say. Afterward came a warning that frightened the girl to the core. He told her to keep her mouth shut or she could kiss her sweet little grandmother goodbye. And he ran the streets, so don't mess with me. In other words, he said, I'm running the streets. Don't mess with me, she told prosecutors. She felt like she was in a life or death situation, prosecutors wrote. Golubsky went on to sexually assault the girl more than 10 times between 1998 and 2001, frequently threatening to kill her or her grandmother, even once forcing her to dig her own grave at a local cemetery, prosecutors said. Now, mind you, this happens all over. It's been happening for decades and no doubt centuries with us, targeting black little girls, targeting black women. Police going and arresting the boyfriend or the husband and then coming back, raping the wife or the girlfriend. These things have been perpetual. And then it come to find out there was another case I read today of Alameda County, sitting officers down because they did not pass a psychological test. You have so many officers in this country that have not passed any psychological exam, even though they're out patrolling on the streets. You have insane, violent bigots out here overseeing in our poorest communities, our women, looking over our children, lusting for them, and then getting away with it even after report on these same officers or imperialists that would go and approach our girls, women, and children. These are the same ones that are out patrolling. So when we discuss reforming police departments, it will not happen. We must take it upon ourselves to do the reformations. We must take it upon ourselves to protect our communities. The things that we don't do while we sit back looking for lavishness or looking for a way to have some fun or to celebrate some holiday that does not even exist for you or me, we're letting these things happen to our own selves. It is up to us to do for us what we need to do for ourselves, and right now, these approaches by even a protest, and you mentioned Black Lives Matter, it was set up. Protests do never warrant us anything. We get no gains. We just get pats on the fannies and then turned away and said, we're going to resolve these issues. It never happens. I wanted to bring this to the fore tonight. I'm grateful that you brought this subject matter up, but Golubsky is just one of many across this country that has done this, and now at the age of 69, when he's real sick, they let him out on bond, as you mentioned, last Friday. He got out on bond, and he'll be awaiting trial. But then once he gets to trial, based on his condition, it won't matter. It won't matter because he's already almost dead as it is. But with you and I and our revolutionaries who are still in prison, not given a chance, lying on a bed in the hospital with their wrists bound by chains and their ankles by chains and just for speaking up, what happened to First Amendment? It never worked for us. This lets me know and lets you and I all know, all of us know, that we were never a part of any constitution that they had set out, even though they would like for us to believe it through the politicians, the Adams, the mayor in Chicago, or any mayor that I know of in this country that are black or African. They want you and I to believe that we have these inalienable rights that we don't have, but you and I sit back and we want to believe that we have these rights because we were told we had these rights. So we go do battle and lose lives by the state, like Dr. Zena Crenshaw Logo, who fought
Brother
valiantly.
Dennis. Brother
yeah.
Dennis,
let me,
Dr. Jura is waiting, and she has a heavy time schedule, so we will come back to you. Now, we want to deal with what the Mandela Initiative is all about. It's about us organizing to do something about it. And so it's with great pleasure that we open up the mic for our special jurist, Vicky Casanova, the international jurist, who was one of those that helped us say, we charge genocide. Welcome, and thank you for coming on board.
I thank
Hello,
you
your
so
microphone.
Much. I thank you for having me. I wish I could say that I am delighted to be here, you know, that it's a pleasure. I can say that I'm humbled and that it is an honor to be able to share a little bit about the work that you all are doing. But it is so, so tragic and so painful, right, to hear what Brother Ralph just summarized and quite accurately characterized as not an anomaly, right? This is behavior which we know is just too often deeply embedded in the system, the injustice system, the criminal punishment system. So, yes, I did have the awesome responsibility and honor to be one of several international jurists who were able to come together last October, actually on the anniversary, 70th anniversary of the We Charge Genocide famous and infamous petition to the world stage, the United Nations, and those who could be influenced by that. When our ancestors took the opportunity to highlight, again, at the hands of quote-unquote law enforcement here in the U.S., those who are actually the ancestors and the precursors of those in the policing system now. We do know that those were, quote-unquote, slave patrols, right, that were the founding and the genesis of the introduction of this the same behavior that we're seeing now. So you're absolutely right what our host stated, that how do you reform and restore something which was invented to do exactly what it's doing right now. So my sister just spoke about the 2021 International Tribunal on U.S. human rights abuses against Black, Brown, and Indigenous peoples, and the Spirit of Mandela Coalition, and just many courageous political prisoners and former prisoners of war, political prisoners who spent time, I don't even know how to say it that, but because they weren't just quote unquote doing time, right? If this is how these abusers, and that's a very gentle word for what we just heard and for how, you know, people, human beings, in particular, Black, Brown, Indigenous, women, children, boys, right, girls, trans folks, elders. It's unconscionable. But it took the opportunity to hear for several days through this really awesome tribunal at a people's hearing on the International Convention on the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. So it's a crime, these human rights abuses, which are very, very clearly codified in the Genocide Convention. And, you know, when you, I'd like to direct people's attention to just Google and look up the Spirit of Mandela Coalition. Look up the 2021 Tribunal, International Tribunal. We Charge Genocide again. Look at the full verdict, the full final verdict. And again, we as jurists were charged with literally listening, just listening and hearing days and days of directly impacted testimony from parents whose children have been brutalized, murdered, incarcerated, set up by today's counterintelligence program, COINTELPRO, which you're absolutely right. What we heard was irrefutable, that this is indeed the people's indictment was verified based on folks' experiences. And what I want to say is just quickly to share with you in the convention, the Genocide Convention, which, you know, we mentioned, and which this government and many, many others across the world ratified, and the U.S. has not ratified many of the treaties in the U.S., but that does make it law that is to be respected right here. It states that genocide is defined as the intent to destroy in whole or in part a national, ethnical, racial, or religious group as such, and there are five different categories, for example, killing members of the group, causing serious bodily or mental harm to members of the group, which we just heard, right? Deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part, et cetera, et cetera. Imposing measures intended to prevent births within the group, forcibly transferring children of the group to another group. So, again, the point is that these are not, clearly not isolated instances. They're not just individuals with who are predators or pedophiles or just mentally ill. There are patterns and practices, which it struck me so much as you were reading the article aloud for your audience, for your esteemed audience. It struck me how similar some of these descriptions were to what initially brought me into full-fledged into this human rights work. Human rights, which is encompasses civil rights, but it's much, much, much bigger. It's not just that it's international law; it's that it includes a proactive requirement for anyone in the world and everyone and governments at all levels, local, human rights cities, you know, other nations, to hold accountable any system that is breaching these human rights norms, right? And what brought me into that work was what was happening in Chicago that the world now knows is, again, these patterns and practices, people turning a blind eye, no one believing when they've heard over and over and over and over about, in this case, torture of young teenagers in many, many, many cases on a racialized basis. They were primarily Black, also Latino. But we later learned that there were many, after those hundreds and hundreds, there were many women and girls as well who were mistreated. And that's such a soft and gentle word, right? Words matter. Who were also subjected to this genocidal treatment by those who are paid to serve and protect. I was also struck by the fact that there's really no reparation. There's no amount of money that can't go back and erase the harms. You can't undo when these genocidal practices are done. And again, to your point, when people like our COINTELPRO political prisoners, right, the freedom fighters, the Panthers, the folks of their day who were literally not attacking anyone. They were simply saying, you stay out of our communities. We are going to protect our own. We're going to feed breakfast to the children. We're going to, create these pioneering Head Start educational programs, right, to be able to have free health clinics for our elders, the things that would help prevent genocide, right? And I'm going to pause in a moment, but the things that would not expect anyone would not require anyone else from any other community or nation, or nationality or culture to give a hand or even, a hand up, but simply to stop attempting to destroy in whole or in part this national, ethnic, racial groups. And so what we have today is just no excuse for anyone, honestly, anywhere in the world, especially with the proliferation of media. And thank you so much. Thank you so much for being so courageous. And it is courageous, right, to continue to ensure that the people are able to hear these stories and to also hear that there are new tools and tactics and teams that are working against the odds to continue to press forward. So I will pause there. There's nothing that you can say. You know, people can get desensitized to this sort of just brutal, heinous, and protected. That's the thing about it. It's subsidized, structural, race-based. It's genocide. I can't call it brutality. I can't call it mistreatment. You can't call it, and it's beyond police. That was the other point that was so loud and clear in throughout this tribunal and the testimony. Oh my. It's like what's happening in Jackson, Mississippi right now with the water, right? Or the lack of water. Water is life. And if that happened in Flint before that, but it's also why there are to at this moment incarcerated young people and elders who were the water protectors at Standing Rock. So we must stand together. We have no alternative.
Thank you.
We must. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You're quite eloquent in describing our situation. And I like when you said we all must be proactive or have a proactive requirement to fight this system's ills and evils. As I said, very eloquent. We're so happy that you were to be on. And we'll switch back. We look forward to having you again, but we'll switch back to Brother Dennis. I think he has a guest, and we'll finish up with that.
Well, before we go to Dennis.
I'm sorry. May I toss just one thing out there? I wanted to mention Google, Women's All Points Bulletin. So many times there are people who are just, of course, directly impacted, who know the worst of the situation because they've lived it, they've survived it, and they are going to do whatever they can. In this case, applying human rights and Human Rights City's local application and holding people accountable so no one else has to ever suffer what has been suffered. There are also many people who are working to lift up the Afro-Brazilian, Afro-Colombian experiences, right? It's everywhere. It's not just in the U.S., and the system will only be held accountable, again, if we all work in unity to do this. So thank you again.
I understand you have a program at the U.N. that's coming up shortly with educators from all over the diaspora. Did you want to make an announcement about that?
Well, there are a number of things. Literally just wrapped up some things today. The point is that, there is a desire for folks here, especially in this nation, to not understand anything about human rights, right? There's this desire to not even know anyone's history and to simply believe the lies that we were told, right, about each other, about the police, about those who are apologists and protectors for this injustice system. So what I will share with you is that coming up in December, there is actually the very first convening of the UN permanent forum for peoples of African descent. There also is a permanent forum for indigenous peoples. And so we do need to understand and apply the human rights frame because, again, it's not you are no longer bound only to the civil law in your nation, which, as you said, my sister and brother could say that, well, you're not even a person, so this doesn't apply to you, or you were incarcerated, so you, whether you were set up or not, whether you did that time or not, you will never, you're disenfranchised for life, right? The human rights frame, and we simply must understand it. We teach and we learn and we apply those principles right here at home.
Well, thank you. That's so much to absorb, to digest. But you say Google Women's All Points Bulletin. Is that correct?
Yes, that's one, just one of the small nonprofits, an NGO directly impacted persons who decided that, okay, this has happened. I'm not going to bury my head in the sand. I'm not going to be fearful. I'm going to teach and learn and unite and help apply by any means necessary practices so that this does not happen again to other anyone of any gender. And
well, thank you so much.
And yeah, I just wanted to say the UN Permanent Forum I mentioned in December. So just help teach human rights. That's it.
Okay, and we hope to have you back to remind us. And we're going to continue with what can we do, and our main focus is support our political prisoners, and we will continue on this subject. Thank you again.
And we are planning a special program on this whole issue of water because, as you pointed out, it's not just Jackson, Mississippi. Right here in New York City, they're telling us we don't have a problem, and yet someone, a tenant was tested recently, and his urine was tested, and it was 50% had arsenic in it. So I think we have a problem. And it's the infrastructure wherever colonized people are. And it is not an act. It is deliberate genocide, as you pointed out, because water is life. So we definitely hope you don't mind, but we will be keeping you in our frame of reference. And we thank you so much for responding to this article that Brother Dennis Noel Sayero was so kind to send to us and to call to our attention. He always does that. He serves as a researcher for our program, and we're dedicated for that. I want to go immediately to Brother Bilal Sunni Ali because he has a problem, but he also has a solution to the problem. I know he is planning a Zoom webinar very shortly, and I would like him to announce that and anything else he wants to discuss. And we are extending the program this evening because we sort of stepped outside our usual format. So we are definitely extending the program. Brother Bilal, your mic is open.
Your mic is open.
Oh, no, it's not. I'm sorry.
Sorry.
I'm sorry it wasn't open. Paul, I apologize. Go ahead.
Okay, Betty and Ralph and your listening audience, just want to thank you for giving me an opportunity. What I wanted to announce is that we're having a webinar this coming Saturday, October the 1st at 1 p.m. And the webinar is on the counterintelligence program, like Ms. Casanova was just talking about, the devastation that the counterintelligence program has done. We've initiated a COINTELPRO 2998 coalition, which is to get people interested in bringing that bill, which was introduced by Congressman Bobby Rush, to the Congress floor. It's still in committee. We want to bring it to the floor. But meanwhile, what we're doing is that we're telling the story of what devastation it has done. We don't know if the bill will ever get to the floor or get passed. our next webinar is going to be featuring Professor Ward Churchill, and that's going to be this Saturday at one p.m. And I don't have a registration form, but I'll get it to you tomorrow, no later than tomorrow at noon. You'll get that registration form. You can distribute it to your guests. And also on the same program with Ward Churchill will be a young sister named Nina Morgan, who will be she represents a lot of the young people who have just become political prisoners, not well known at all, but they've become political prisoners during the rebellious period that followed the killing, the murder of George Floyd, the murder of Michael Brown, and other hideous murders that took place while we were all under house arrest during that COVID so-called pandemic, the plandemic. So we want people to, when you get the registration form, please register and check it out, and so that you can come to a good understanding of what the COINTELPRO, what the COINTELPRO has done to our community, has done to people in our community. And also we'll be announcing an upcoming webinar that we're going to be doing that's titled Growing Up Targeted. And this will be featuring some of my own children who will be want to express to the world what it means to grow up as a target of COINTELPRO. Many of you have heard about the recent incident which happened in which my son was shot. He was attacked and shot and then charged with murder because he defended himself. So that's the gist of the show, and that's the gist of what we're facing. There's the young people. We need to hear from the old heads like myself and Ward Churchill, but we need to hear from the young people and see what's taking place now. And we need to hear from the issue of what happened with my son Chaka Zulu. So that a lot of people think that you have to be out there raving red, black, and green flag, but you can just be doing normal business and just educating people, and you'll become a target. And not just become a target, you'll become a victim of COINTELPRO. So that's why we're pushing this series of webinars, and you can go to our website, www.imamjamilactionnetwork.org. Again, that's www.imamjamilactionnetwork.org. And the last thing I want to say is that on Imam Jamil's 79th birthday, Tuesday, October the 4th, there'll be in Atlanta a demonstration at CNN. Demanding that they interview the person who confessed to the crimes that Imam Jamil has been sitting in prison for the past 22 years for. That's one Otis Jackson, and we ourselves will be playing the interview on the LED panel right across the street from CNN, so people will know what we're talking about, and CNN will not be able to say that they don't know what we're talking about. Thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you very much for bringing us that information, and more important, thank you very much for all of your work for many, many years. Thank you for participating in their organization to defend our community and your continued work. I cannot say enough. So thank you. Look forward to hearing from you. We will be tuning in on the COINTELPRO program on Bill 2998 and looking forward to Ward Churchill and Anita Morgan to educate us. Sister Betty.
We, as you know, have many political prisoners on our programs. We don't always identify everybody for obvious reasons, but we're opening up the mics for many of our Jericho comrades. We're going to start off with our New York City Jericho, who's in the house. I believe Sister Ann Lamb has a report to give us. Sister Ann, your mic is open, and you should know that Jericho is planning a special event for one of our warriors that made Dennis Knowles' amount so appalling. And I am referring to Peltier. And Mike is open.
Thank you so much, Ms. Betty Bow. Always a privilege to be with you. I was going to report a little bit more about this person's confession, which is really amazing. If you go to YouTube and you just put in, my name is James Santos, a.k.a. Otis Jackson, you can watch the video yourself. It's only 15 minutes long. And this man has confessed all the way since March of 2000 when this incident first happened. So it's not like the government doesn't know that this guy says, I am the person who killed officers, these two officers, and it is not Imam Jamil Al-Amin. So in a never-before-published sworn deposition, Jackson recalls the events of the night of Thursday, March 16, 2000, in vivid detail. And we're not going into all the vivid detail, but we have a little synopsis. He was headed toward the West End Community Mosque led by Imam Jamil Al-Amin. By the time Jackson made his way to the store, it was already late. He was afraid the store would be closed since he didn't see anyone else on the street. His fear was affirmed, and the store wasn't open. As he turned to leave, Jackson saw a patrol car pull up. The driver of the patrol car got out and asked Jackson to put his hands up. Jackson, who was on parole, ignored the order to put his hands up and instead began to explain he was not trying to break into the store. Both officers were out of the car with guns drawn and demanding Jackson put his hands up. The cops were closing in and there was little space between them. Jackson made a quick decision. He backed up against the Mercedes, pulled out his gun, and began to fire. He approached the officer he thought was the most aggressive and resumed firing. Deputy Kinchin returned fire, hitting Jackson in the upper left arm twice. Jackson, now angered and fearful for his life, shot back, downing the officer. He then turned his attention to Deputy English and shot at him four times. After English went down, Jackson, in a state of shock, walked down past the mosque. He made his way back to his car and drove to his mother's house. He called his parole officer the next morning to let her know that he had, quote-unquote, been involved in the situation, but he didn't tell her any details. In the following days, he checked in with the monitoring company, who was wearing an ankle bracelet, and his parole officer, and was given a ride back home. As they pulled onto his street, he noticed many unmarked police cars. After entering his driveway, multiple police officers emerged. They searched the house and found ammunition, but his bloody clothes remained untouched in the closet. On March 28, 2000, Jackson's parole was revoked, and he was sent back to prison to serve the remainder of his sentence in Nevada. Upon his detainment in Florida and later transferred to Nevada, Jackson confessed a crime to anyone who would listen. Jackson claims that when he reached the Clark County Jail in Las Vegas, Nevada, he made numerous phone calls to the FBI, after which an agent arrived to discuss the incident with him. Jackson then recalled telling his story to Special Agent Mahoney. Special Agent Devin Mahoney recalls documenting the confession, but not much beyond that, or so he claims. Mahoney remembers getting a call from a superior to talk to someone in a Las Vegas jail and then to document it and file it up the chain of command. The confession was documented and filed on June 29th, 2000. So the powers that be knew all the way back in June of 2000 that Imam Jamil Al-Amin had not committed that crime. So I would encourage people definitely go to YouTube, put in my name is, you know, Otis Jackson, and this thing will show up. And it's only 15 minutes long. It's well worth watching, and I'm so glad that people will be playing it outside of CNN on October 4th. Now, in another issue that just came up which goes back to what the brother was talking about at the beginning of your show, out in Dublin prison, FBI Dublin as it's known, part of the federal prison, dozens of women have been detailing rape and retaliation. And this has been going on for a long, long time. And it's really disgusting, talk about genocide. And there's all these male guards here in the prison who have been taking total advantage of the women who they're supposed to be taken care of, Hemina Hemina. So we have Ray Garcia, James Highhouse, Ross Klinger, John Bellhouse, and Enrique Chavez, who are all currently facing charges because they, some of them have pleaded guilty to the crime of sexual abuse of a ward, right? And the former warden and Officer John Bellhouse have entered not guilty pleas and are headed to trial. These are documented charges from 2018 to 2021. And we know that women have been saying this at FCI Dublin for a long time. So this is just yet another example of the daily genocide and abuse that people go through in the prison system, you know. And women should not have to be exposed to this kind of horrible thing. There should not be male COs in women's prisons. They really shouldn't. Now, our friend Joy Powell, who is also one of our political prisoners, she was raped when she was up in Albion by COs, and they just denied it. And that's how they get away with these things. They just deny it. Oh, it never happened. They're making it up, you know.
Well, thank you, and give us the announcement about Leonard Peltier's event. Can you give us the announcement?
Oh, sure. That'll be on Saturday, October 8th from 1 to 4 at the People's Forum at 320 West 37th Street. It's up on our website, jerichoNY.org. We will have Daniel Battaglia, who is the International Leonard Peltier Defense Committee Secretary, who will be there in person. We will have the attorney, Kevin Sharp, former judge, who is Leonard Peltier's lead attorney. He will be speaking to us via Zoom. And we will have another guy whose last name is Berg. I forgot his first name. I'm very sorry. He was actually at Pine Ridge during the whole Reign of Terror. He was a teacher there. And he testified for Leonard in one of his parole hearings in the 1990s. And that was when one of the parole commissioners actually voted to release Leonard and then lost his job. We'll have our dear friend Winnie Foster, who is Leonard Peltier's spiritual advisor, and we are working on rounding up some wonderful culture as well, and it should be a wonderful event. It's sort of that's like the beginning of Indigenous Peoples Weekend, as people in New York City know it as, culminating with so-called Columbus Day, when there's always stuff going on as well. So we're hoping that people will come out for Leonard. And it will also be live streamed. And so, you know, if you can't make it there for whatever reason, or if you don't live in New York City, as soon as we get the live stream link, we will be putting it out as well. You can go to jerichoNY.org, look for the event down the left-hand side, click on it, and you'll have all the information. You can also download flight palm cards.
Thank you so much for that. And as I say, my book, my Bible, is Jericho website. Let us stay in touch with the Jericho website, and we will get more information on things that are happening. Sister Betty.
We have a report on what's going on in Mississippi, but before we go to that, Brother Kazi, your mic is open, and we have 7785. Your mic is also open. Did either one of you want to make a comment?
Sure. All power to people, sister. I've just been listening tonight and want to continue. I just have a question about the ratification. How to the sister that was, if she was still there, Casanova, about how to pressure or what things we can do to get them to ratify those verdicts, you know?
Very good, Kazi. What can we do to ratify those verdicts? What we can do is... Okay, I know she's asking Vicky Casanova, and so I will give her opportunity to answer that.
No, that's all right. Let me continue to listen for a second. Brother, you have more?
It'll only take a second. We can demand before we practice political slavery again and give the Democrats our vote to save them from Mr. Trump. they have to pass that. We could add that onto a list. So now, Sister Casanova, would you please?
No, I'm going to defer if I could. I thought that there was something else that our brother was going to share really quickly.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to, one other thing I had, I think we need to start correcting some of the problems ourselves, you know, especially around these guards and around, you know, these pigs in the community that's violating our people. You know, we need to put together our own response to that. Anyways. Sister, please.
Right. At the simplest level, you know, even when there are a few and far between, but a little bit of progress in terms of indictments, right, a little bit of time served compared to our political prisoners and others, right, even when there's a little bit of progress that we can see, it's still the cost. Is paid by the taxpayers. The cost, so there's no penalty in terms of accountability, and that's one of the things and one of the principles, right, from a human rights standpoint. So even the pressure for the laws here, while we don't want to be bound only by these very, very, very biased and racist laws, they still need to have tremendous pressure to change them, right? To your point, this we can't answer that right now on this call, but there's lots of ongoing education and conversations that continue to happen. I believe the Spirit of Mandela Coalition and some of the continued work that's being done, you know, regionally to expand this momentum and build on such courageous work that was done that, again, left through these testimonies at the tribunal, there was no other verdict that we as jurors could even come up with. It was irrefutable. The last thing I will say is that, Brother Ralph, and I agree that the prospect of what's happening with this, you know, it's fascism, right? The prospect of what's happening really needs to be alarming to anybody and everybody who's not paying attention. However, this system has gone deeper and wider, regardless of who is in the house that my enslaved ancestors built, that's called the White House, right? So I hear you. I don't think that it's gonna be cured just by the vote.
Thank you. All right.
Right on.
You got that right.
7785. Did you want to make a comment before we go to Mississippi?
Yes. Very very quickly, because all this good information is coming out. Let me say a couple of things. First of all, the discussion and the call out for the newer political prisoners, the people that have been arrested and, you know, going to trials now, and some of them already in captivity and prisons and so forth, of the struggle of the last few years, Black Lives Matter and all the struggle against cops murdering people, that's very important. You know, those names, those individuals, you know, need to be brought forth in a good way. I mean, you know, nobody disagrees with that, but we need to make sure that that's happening. And Jericho, of course, will play its part in that as well. The other thing I just want to say, without getting into a deep analysis or anything, but Brother Kanzi's comments just now, I think need to be seriously thought about. I'm just talking about by individuals, by collectives and organizations and so forth. You know, in the streets, making it public, you know, protesting when, you know, horrible abuses and murders happen continues to be needed. But we do have to start thinking a little bit beyond just those, you know, activities. And I mean thinking about it in terms of, you know, men and women, brothers and sisters sitting, you know, in collectives and in their own, you know, spaces and thinking about and looking back maybe historically also is what's happened here and other places, because, you know, struggle will only advance and be more successful the stronger and more forceful it becomes. And I'll just leave it at that and continue to listen to this great information. And,
thank
of course, free them all.
Free them all, and we see elegance continues in another form on this program that we have. Sister Betty.
We have Sister Commander Potts on the line, I believe, talking and giving us an update on the ongoing water crisis in Mississippi. We welcome you back, and we thank you for waiting. Your mic is open. And please tell us how to help. Give us numbers where people can donate. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I hope everybody is doing okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Please continue.
Well,
we're waiting with bated breath for your report.
Well,
tell us what
it's,
you have
it's,
been doing, how we can help.
Yes, sir. Well, it's not good. We're still dealing with the water crisis here in Jackson, Mississippi, even though the governor said that the water is safe to drink. Today, I washed my hands in a church bathroom, and you could smell the funk coming from the water. We have a medical mall here where low-income families go to where they have to wash their hands. And they say you can smell the water coming through the pipes and the water even in the toilets and everything is brown. I have a young lady with a newborn baby that's been having to tote water. I took her over a quarter of a pallet of water. She's going through two boxes and two 24 packs of water per day. So that's a lot just for them to be able to bathe and cook and brush their teeth, and this is just one family. So I'm in a U-Haul right now. I've been in one every day. I just did my last stop probably about 30 minutes ago, so I got on this call kind of late because I was still out doing water. So I do need donations. The only way that I'm able to receive them is via Cash App, and my Cash App is $ Mississippi Girl, the GIRL, 82. That is Cash App sign, Mississippi Girl, 82. But it's absolutely ridiculous of how much water I'm having to pass out. I'm delivering about 4 to 6 pallets of water daily. That's just how bad the water is. And you got people just stopping me wherever I go. Ma'am, do you have some water that you can give me? And I'm having to stop even at the Walmart line just to try to give people clean drinking water. I'm going to see our sick, our elderly, those in retirement apartments. They're still dealing with this stuff. They can't boil water and then be trying to tote pipe in hot water and clean to drink because they still got to wait on it to be cold.
Dollar sign Mississippi Girl 2282. Dollar sign Mississippi 82. And your name?
My name is Sherelle Potts, and I'm the commander of Jackson New Black Panther Party, and I'm also the chairwoman of Jackson, Mississippi Black Panther Party.
Okie dokie, Chairwoman of Mississippi Black Panther Party. Folks, remember that. I can't even imagine that. Dollar sign Mississippi Girl 82, somebody who has been doing the work. And this is why we have to change things. As many of our speakers say, it will never change until we do something about it. Let's start doing it. And I remember the gentleman who was about to help John Brown said, you know, I'm broke, but I always have a few dollars for sedition. Well, let's just, even though we're broke, have a few dollars for water. Thank
yes.
you.
All right. Cheryl, we'll be texting you. We want to follow up with you because we're going to be doing a special program on WBAI, which is on Wednesday evenings, and we want to deal with the water crisis. So we will be in touch with you. And thank you for taking the time. I know you must be exhausted to get on this program this evening. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Did you want to say something else, ma'am?
I just wanted to tell everybody thank you in every little bit. U-Haul in Jackson, Mississippi has been very gracious to allow me to use this U-Haul, even though it's supposed to be a bill on it. They're allowing me time to keep it and extend it, and then I will get a bill at the end when I turn it in that will have to be paid. So I thank God that I'm not having to make a daily payment. So any little bit will help.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Sister Betty.
All right. I believe we have some of our analysts in who connect the dots between the war at home and the war abroad. Brother Joel, your mic is open, and thank you. We missed you last week. Joel, your mic is open. All right. We're going to move on. Tom, your mic is open. Tom, your mic is open.
Hello, brothers and sisters. I hope that Ralph's cancer in his hand is that's okay. When in the American Revolution against England, Thomas Jefferson made this statement that all men are created equal and they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, among which are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Well, obviously, Thomas Jefferson, who was a slave owner, certainly his definition of men was limited to white men who had property. I would like to say something about this Dr. Fauci of the Center for Disease Control. He made a statement recently that young gays are the most promiscuous group in our population, and they are spreading the monkey virus. This is an outrageous statement. Gays have been subject to prejudice for many years, and now this is going to be open season on gays, and this so-called Dr. Fauci of the Center for Disease Control must not only apologize to the gay community for saying such an outrageous thing, but he must resign his position. And then we have this problem with the Kiev government in Ukraine, a government that includes neo-Nazis and anti-Semites. Zelensky, who heads this this government, has actually appeared before Congress. He's being subsidized by billions of dollars, and that he he is being given arms to fight against the Russians, and the people in the Ukraine to avoid the war in the Ukraine millions have fled the country, and here we have an example of a situation where the people have been have been fooled, and they are the Russians are being and Putin in particular is are being demonized, and this is all part of what I call United States on steroid capitalism, and the fact of the matter is that the amount of people that are unemployed, that are suffering economically, is have reached the time of the Great Depression of the 1930s, and yet this Zelensky, he's being held up by our government, and this is an example of American imperialism. The fact of the matter is that our economy is in a state, a critical state of decay, and this is a way of fooling the American public. All right. Thank you very much. And as I said, Ralph, I hope that you are doing fine with the cancer skin cancer you have on your hand. Thank you.
Thank you so very much for that acknowledgement. Yes, I am doing better, and I hope you are getting well. And when we get old, we don't have the fire of youth, but we have the intention, and we will continue. And
Ralph, if you don't mind, I noticed there's some numbers. I'd like to see if they would like to make any kind of comment. I'm going to open up. The last four digits are 2628. If you want to make a comment, fine. If you don't, we'll just move on. 2628, the last four digits. The first three are 646. Did you want to make a comment this evening?
Thank you.
Okay.
Not tonight.
All right. That's quite all right and welcome. The last four digits are 3036. Did you want to make a comment this evening? Last four digits, 3036. Did you want to make a comment this evening? Okay. Then we'll just move on. Before we go back to Brother Dennis, we want to see if 3036, did you want to make a comment? Okay. Then we'll see if Brother Joel is still with us and if he's able to have his mic on now. Brother Joel, your mic is open. We called on you earlier.
Yes, I was on the whole time, but somehow I couldn't get my own audio going at this end. So anyway, I'm on now also, and I hope everybody can hear my voice. I just wanted to make a few comments about the last speaker, and but not about the speaker himself, but about the content. I think that it could be a little further deepened. That we saw that Dr. Fauci, so-called Dr. Fauci, made this comment about trying to associate monkeypox and associate that as the source of being gay males. They did the same thing with AIDS. But in the case of AIDS, I think it's conclusively borne out by a lot of evidence that AIDS was designed to go after certain segments of the population that were not too popular with those who were running biological warfare infrastructure. It was no accident that AIDS infected so many gay males and also a lot of the black youth because of the way it was designed to be transmitted. That is, it goes in the direction of the fluids and the bodily fluids, and that meant that if somebody was gay or part of the youth that was heavily subjected to the chemical warfare of dope during that period, that the sharing of needles, for example, would spread that phenomenon more widely, so that the AIDS, because of the way it was designed to be transmitted, was a very deadly biological warfare which took a very heavy toll among gays and also people of color so on. So it was no accident. And the same forces also are at work in the world, in the Ukraine, because at one time it was assumed that, well, the Nazis, they're anti-Jews and so on, and but people, a lot of people closed their eyes to the class aspect of what was going on, and in today's world, there's an alliance between fascists, Nazis, and many powerful Zionists. And even at the time, even during the Nazi German period, if you read a book like Zionism in the Era of the Dictators by Leni Brenner, it authoritatively shows the collaboration even at that time. And Netanyahu, when he spoke once in Israel and also in Germany, where he said that the Nazis did not initially want to exterminate the Jews. They wanted to drive them out of Europe. Now, this is spoken by Netanyahu, who's part of the movement, who wanted to, who are having trouble recruiting Jewish people to start the Zionist state in Israel. And that is basically how it got started. And it reduplicated, set into motion again the old Crusades, because it disrupted the equilibrium and the stalemate that had largely made the Crusades dormant but not unable to be reawakened by the occupation of that central hub of the Middle East, now with 5 million or 6 million people who essentially came out of Europe and whose organizations are aligned with the imperialists who wanted to set back the liberation struggles in the Middle East and to place that under a more thorough colonial bondage. And what's going on today in the Ukraine is the building of a Western colony and pawn in the Ukraine, and also to disrupt the development and the existence of the Russian Federation, so as to colonize. Caused a lot of setbacks in Russia and the renunciation of communism and socialism and National Liberation Front support and so on in Russia, but they haven't yet been able to colonize it. And what they hate about and that was a dynamic that was going very strongly during the Yeltsin period and before that to a beginning lesser extent during the Gorbachev period. And Putin was the one that put his foot down and said, enough is enough. You're not going to colonize Russia, although you've inflicted great injury on us. Well, he put his foot down, and that's why he's demonized. It's not only the Ukraine thing. The real invasion of the Ukraine took place in 2014 by the West through a coup d'etat. And we have to remember also that even though the Nazi descendants in the Ukraine that was so vicious that even the German Nazis were embarrassed and had to hold them back, and, these are now working with Zionists and especially with the largely Jewish oligarchs who are billionaires in the Ukraine who are the ones who really dominate the Ukraine. And today, of course, with the backing and the puppeteering of U.S. imperialism. I don't think Zelensky can go to the bathroom without raising his hand and getting a pass from the U.S. ruling class and with the European Union playing the junior partner. And we could be witnessing the global class war breaking out into the World War III that many people felt was in the cards sooner or later. And it's not really based on merely ideological differences, but the ideological differences that reflect different class forces that emerged in the Russian, Chinese, Cuban, and other socialist revolutions that are the challenge to imperialism and are the ones the working class as it becomes stronger and takes power is the only class that can supersede the capitalism with a progressive outlook and with a greater advance of civilization. Otherwise, civilization, as you know, will be destroyed. Yes, thank you.
I was going to interrupt you there. As I tell everyone, When Joe comes, get your notebook. But remember, the program is archived in such a wonderful analysis of what is going on. We have to listen to it again and again. And, for example, today I heard the new premier of Italy, a woman, and people say, well, the movement of world fascism, this is an example. And when she was asked questions, she sidestepped every question. She just says, we're adding another woman to the world leadership. And I thought, Thatcher, Albright, one more time?
Queen Elizabeth?
I mean, yes, Hillary Clinton. And if you want to know what the UN stands for, don't listen to this program only. Look at Haiti and what the UN plus the United States is doing to them. That's what they stand for.
Look at Cuba.
Look at and it goes on and on. We are not just talking theory of things we think about. We're talking analysis of what we see as to what's going on and what does it mean for the people of color in America. We're in trouble, and as we opened the program with, if you want to look at it, whatever problems we have in this country, they're going to get worse. And then you can no longer refute the realities of our existence. Sister Betty said Brother Dennis wanted to add in before I give the conclusion.
Brother Dennis, we just want to thank you for bringing out that travesty of justice and the double standard. It's not even a double standard. These political prisoners that we treasure were warriors who said enough is enough. It's about time to practice what you preach. And they tried to hold America accountable for what Tom Syracuse says they claim to be the inalienable rights. But as Tom also said, those inalienable rights do not apply to the darker-hued citizens. And all we wanted was freedom. So we take exception to the fact that this criminal, this psychotic, sociopathic criminal, is out on bail, and Mumia is still in. And our brother, Matula Shakur, is still in. And all the other warriors who have stood for us. That's why we've got to stand up for them.
Well, Sister Betty, I have to correct you. When you said the warriors that we cherish, too few of us cherish these warriors. And this is what this program is about, to get more people to cherish the warriors enough to, as one of our guests said, be proactive as a requirement to fight this system's ills and evils. And one of the proactive things you can do, we must do better supporting our political prisoners.
So come out and support Jericho's program. Get on the Zoom with Brother Bilal Suni Ali this coming Saturday. If you want more information about it, I'm sure if you go to the Jericho website, that information will be there. Brother Dennis, again, we thank you. Did you want to say a few more things?
Yes, I had an encapsulation. The defendant abused his position of authority and trust against the most vulnerable members of the community he was sworn to protect. A frightened middle school student who loved her grandmother and a mother worried about the safety of her children. The defendant did not choose his victims at random. He targeted them because of their vulnerabilities. He used these vulnerabilities to manipulate and to threaten them into compliance, and consistently circled back and kept tabs on them to remind them he has the power to control them. The defendant exploited his power and his position to repeatedly and insidiously harm the people and the community he was sworn to protect. These insidious criminals that we talk about permeated throughout every community that we can think of where there are African, indigenous, where there are people of color. These same criminals that target your daughters, your children, these are the same criminals that continuously get what? The patterns and practices, codes of silence, politicians and legislators, police, prosecutors, defense attorneys, and judges enact the what? The rule of law. This is what they do. This is something that we can expect nothing different because they will never stop their patterns of practice. Although real quick, and I'll make this brief, Alameda today, Alameda County Sheriff's Office deputies relieved of duty. And this is the reason why. Nearly 50 sworn Alameda County Sheriff's Office deputies are now on desk duty after being told their pre-employment psychological evaluation scores are too low to allow them to continue as law enforcement officers. Now, mind you, these officers, these sheriff's deputies in Alameda County, have been on the streets since 2016. So now just today, they've been called off the streets due to their evaluations when they first took their psychological exams. And I'll say this, and then I'm closing out, that the fact is, this is what they hire. This is what they look for. They look for these killers who have been over in other countries and have mutilated villages and such. They come back demented. This is what we have that we are faced against. We need to change our approach. Thank you, Uhuru.
Thank you so much for that freedom. And we must show how we cherish our brothers who challenged this tragedy upon our community.
I also want to thank the people who helped organize the Spirit of Mandela International Tribunal that were responsible for enabling us to contact our comrade Vicky Castanova for this evening. And I want to acknowledge the Jericho people for their beyond the call of duty loyalty to the people.
Thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you tomorrow night, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial at 8 p.m. Please listen in, call in, and please support. We have a ways to go. Good night with much love, as Che Guevara stated it, with much love. Good night, my brother.
Get well, brother.
Thank you, my brother.